We are speaking now with two folks from Project 7B, Executive Director Katie Botkin. Katie, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
And founding board member Susan Drumheller. Susan, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Well, let's dive right in on what is Project 7B for the uninitiated. Can you tell us a bit about it and what it does?
Yeah, I mean, I came on only a couple of years ago, and Susan has been here since the beginning. So do you want to talk about the kind of what
the origin started story?
It? Yeah, the origin story.
Well, at the time, the commissioners, the county commissioners were looking at creating, I guess it was the minor land division process at that time. And one thing that concerned me and other folks, at the time I was working for Idaho Conservation League and really paying attention to water quality issues, and they were removing the requirement to get a sign off from Panhandle Health District for, you know, prior to approving a minor land division. And a minor land division is, you know, four lots or fewer. And under the old code, that was considered a short plat, and it still had to have the Panhandle Health District sign off.
Basically a subdivision.
It's a subdivision. Yeah, yeah. It's a small subdivision. It fell under the subdivision code, and the subdivision code has standards. So they created a whole new category that was exempt from the subdivision code. And the thing that really caught my attention and other people who were concerned about it was that lack of any health district oversight. And we realized there was a need for a local organization to kind of pay attention to land use issues, because there was also a push to, you know, reduce the shoreline setbacks, which could have water quality impacts on our lakes and our rivers. And so that was, that was sort of what started it, because, you know, Idaho Conservation League is a statewide organization and really didn't have the capacity to engage in a lot of one-off, you know, smaller, you know, issues in all the counties. Now they do have somebody who focuses on the lakes and the rivers and land use issues, but they're spread pretty thin. And we thought having a county group that could just focus on those issues and educate the public about what's coming up and trying to make sure people were aware would be really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just educate the public generally on land use and the importance of land use, and that it affects so much of what we experience when we're outside, whether it's agriculture or the natural trails that we're hiking on. Those are all land use choices.
And traffic.
Yeah.
And traffic, how does traffic flow, safety when it comes to wildfire? You know, do we have evacuation routes? You know, I mean, where is it appropriate to grow? Where is it not appropriate to grow based on what the resources are? Our initial mission was just around the education piece so that people would understand land use planning better and also be aware of projects that are coming up or things like changes in the county or city codes that could impact things such as, you know, how subdivisions are built and how that impacts the local community.
I always kind of saw it as an effort to try to figure out how we want to manage development to maintain the rural character that we appreciate here in
exactly.
Bonner County.
Yeah.
And so Project 7B, do you have members?
It's not a member-based organization. We have a board and an executive director. And aside from that, anyone is free to participate. The participation is fairly loose. We post things on our social media pages, and people sometimes get involved with specific issues. And then, you know, they're very active people, and people who are barely active but occasionally pop in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we don't have a ton of volunteer opportunities. It's more about trying to help people get engaged in public decision making.
Right.
It is. The people that are engaged are almost all volunteers, right?
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, but they're not necessarily our volunteers, you know. They're
volunteering
Chutana to work on their issues. And we, you know, we later added an advocacy mission to our statement, our mission statement. But that is really about responsible land use planning. And so we don't often get engaged in individual development proposals, more trying to advocate for, you know, good, you know, comprehensive land use plan and those sorts of policy issues that guide land use decisions.
Right. And one thing that we did strongly advocate for was getting rid of MLDs, the minor land divisions, which Susan mentioned earlier. And we saw that it was an actual health issue and safety issue for people. There was a homeowner who actually filed this giant RICO case that with the Mountain Homestead Division subdivision. So, yeah, I...
And that's north of town?
That was north of town, yeah. So that was in the Spokesman Review. I think it was last year.
Well, there's been a lot of media.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because some of the folks at the bottom of that subdivision are having problems.
Yep. Yeah. They found E. coli in their drinking water.
Because it's a tough area to have a bunch of septic in. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And I mean, if you don't have standards, things like that happen. If you don't have oversight, things like that happen. And something that I've said many times is that regardless of how conservative you are about land use and property rights, you don't want to drink your neighbor's poop. So everyone is actually pro having some kind of standards for land use, whether or not they're willing to stand up and say that they are. Everyone actually is when it comes down to it, when it comes down to their own property.
Well, one thing I observed early on with Project 7B is you did collect people kind of across the political spectrum, right? You had people that were very conservative and people that were more liberal that share concerns about the way the county is developing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's by design, it's nonpartisan. And I think land use is a nonpartisan issue, and creating a space that is going to be safe and sustainable for everyone should be a nonpartisan issue.
There's also, yeah, I mean, I think there's one of the key values that's come out in surveys and, you know, is enshrined in our existing comprehensive plan and is also included in the goals and policies of the new plan that's, you know, in the process of being adopted, is just this importance of the rural quality of life and maintaining that. And I think that's a core value that everybody pretty much shares here. We do get accused of being like some sort of liberal organization. And I am not sure why that is, except maybe it's just to try to discredit us.
I mean,
you know, for whoever has some sort of agenda, they want to discredit us amongst, you know, well, more conservative folks.
Do you see 7B's emphasis on maintaining our rural character coming in conflict with those who want to push for more development?
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the development, though, because we're not anti-development. We're anti-development that will ultimately hurt people.
Neighbors.
Yeah, neighbors. And also just the community broadly. Like, if you have a development in a high-risk fire zone, for example, even if you're not a neighbor, if a fire starts in that area, the smoke affects everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's one example. Okay. So people can see more about you guys at project7b.org on the web, or Facebook's a really good source because you're updating stuff there frequently, I see. And that's at Bonner County Project 7B, if you go to Facebook. And I think it's an open page. Anybody can read
that. And even if you don't have a Facebook account, you should be able to see it if you're searching Facebook.
Okay, there's a lot of things going on. I'm sure there's always a lot of things going on in this sphere here, but probably the one that sits at the top of everything is the work that's being done on the Bonner County Comprehensive Plan. So what's the status of that?
That is a great question. It's something that has been ongoing for years since before I came around. And Susan has been diligently working on it for years.
Yeah, I could probably give you an update. Yeah, it's gone through a lot of iterations. You know, when we first started the organization, I think that's about the time that Milton Olerton came in as the planning director. And he was actually hired to deregulate land use in the county. I mean, that was it basically in the job description. So I think that's where the minor land use division thing, that was like one of his first projects. But at any rate, he started these sub-area committees, and they created, you know, sort of what they wanted to see as in the comprehensive plan. So it started with that process, and then they gave it to the Planning Commission to start working on. And at that time, we advocated for hiring a consultant to help with that. And in fact, some of the planning commissioners were asking for that as well, but the county didn't have that budgeted, so that never happened. So it's been a very slow process because you basically have volunteers writing the comp plan. And they've done it chapter by chapter. There's one chapter left, that is the land use chapter. And that is a very important chapter because it includes the map, the land use map. And the land use map divides all the land up into different land use designations. And they've created some new designations. They're changing the land use designations a little bit. And so that is a process that has been ongoing for a while now. The Planning Commission went through the mapping process. And early on, they were looking at designating everything, almost everything in the county as 5 acres, 5 acre minimums. And there was an uproar. And so we helped organize people to, you know, go to the workshops, and the Planning Commission switched gears and they went back to more discrete, you know, dividing that up into ag, forest, and rural residential again.
To maintain larger lot sizes for agriculture.
For agriculture, yeah. And forestry. Yes. And then also smaller, you know, that's where you get the 5 acre minimums. Now they have a rural residential designation, or maybe it's just rural, that's 5 acre minimums. And then there's some other changes. So they deliver that to the Bonner County Commissioners. And sometime last year, and the County Commissioners started holding all these workshops and going through the map. And they just got really bogged down, especially around Priest Lake area. So then there was like a big pause, and they're starting up again this month. July 20th is the next workshop, and that'll focus largely on the map. And yeah, in the meantime, we got a grant from Idaho Realtors Association to hire a consultant to review the land use chapter and make recommendations. And actually, we had originally planned to just have that be a pass-through to the county so they could do their own, like, hire somebody. And then we were going to, if they agreed, we were going to be able to come up with some additional, like, $10,000 to $15,000. But that just never really happened. And I don't think it was because they just didn't want to do it. I think there was a lot of interest, but I think it was just too complicated for them to somehow accept this grant and also come up with their own RFPs and, you know, just all that. So that, instead of turning back the money, we went ahead and took the funds and hired a consultant out of Spokane, Kim Lee Horn. And they did sort of a brief review of the land use chapter and also how that relates to the zoning code. Because after the comp plan, this is a lot. I'm sorry. it's hard not to get down in the weeds. And that is like our biggest challenge is staying out of the weeds and keeping it general. But after they finally approve the comprehensive land use plan, which is the blueprint, the comprehensive plan is the blueprint for how
we
grow.
The master plan, how we envision the county. It's not the zoning map.
Right.
That's a different thing.
Yeah.
But
right.
This kind of tells what the county should be doing with zoning.
Yeah. And it does help dictate zoning. And so after this, they're going to move into updating the zoning code. So the recommendations apply both to the land use chapter and the map and how that should translate in the zoning code when it comes to, zoning designations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the consultant is given a kind of a high level view of it at this point. I assume the consultant can kind of look at other areas of the Northwest or the country and see some places that are doing a good job with it, right? With these kind of land use issues.
Right.
And so that can kind of be a model for how we might do it here.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, one of the things that Rachel is the woman who did the review. She was also looking at things that were specific to Idaho. For example, there was some recent legislation with the area of impact for cities and how, you can only really have a designated area of impact that will be incorporated within the next 5 years. And that really reduced the area of impact that cities were able to kind of say, well, this is our plan. This is our 5-year plan. And so she had some recommendations for that. And that was one of the several things that she recommended. It's
Idaho specific.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say something else. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
There's so much to say.
Yeah.
And keep your mind.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I think it's easy, as you were mentioning, Chris, I think it's easy to kind of like let your eyes glaze over with some of the details. But as you're saying, the comprehensive plan, because it is a document that will plan out the next 10 to 20 years and what the county should look like in terms of like, where should the agriculture go? Where should the houses go? I think it's important to really take it seriously.
Yeah. And it is a vision document more than anything else, but it does dictate kind of where the zoning code will go. And so it is very important. And it also is supposed to be based on community input. So that's one reason why we've really tried hard to get the community involved, but it gets so wonky. It's kind of hard to do that. The map part is really important though, because that's where people can see how it's going to affect kind of where
they live. Yeah.
And in Priest River or Priest Lake, they've been very active up there because they've been very concerned about, and this was another thing where the Planning Commission initially wanted to try to make the map look all uniform, and all the properties that are high density that are basically non-conforming to the current comp plan, they wanted it all to be uniform and look the same. And so they started changing everything to what is actually on the ground. But the concern there is then what that could do is increase the density over time in this sensitive environmental area. And so there was an uproar over that. Planning Commission backed off, went back to, leaving the non-conforming uses, which is totally fine. It doesn't keep anybody from losing their property in the way that it's being used now. But then when it got to the BOCC, the Bonner County Commissioners, they ended up reversing that yet again. And that's where things got bogged down. And so she has some specific recommendations about how to deal with that. And it sounds like folks were interested in that. So we're hopeful that some of this,
some of the decision makers.
Yeah, because we did. She presented this to the Bonner County Commissioners a couple weeks ago at their planning update meeting. And that is available online, actually.
Right. It's linked on our Facebook page.
It is. OK, great. Yeah. So there's a link on our Facebook page if people want to see what her presentation is. And I think we also have a link to this report if people want to read it.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
Okay, so that's kind of the big thing that's going on right now is redoing the comprehensive plan. I want to come back and talk about a few of the current issues that are there, but let's talk about a couple other things first, because one of the things you guys are engaged with is is a survey for the Long Bridge, and the pedestrian Long Bridge has been closed by Idaho Transportation Department because there's some structural deficiencies. There's a safety concern, that even though it doesn't have vehicular traffic on it now, it's just pedestrians, which is pretty light use for that bridge. They're closing the bridge. So why is Project 7B involved with that? Tell us about the survey and how people access that and what you plan to do with it.
Right. Yeah. So we're involved because, I mean, traffic is part of land use, and having a connection between Sagal and Sandpoint that isn't just vehicles is very important to the community. And it is, you know, it has to do with land use. It has to do with pedestrian friendly, bike friendly land use practices. And it's, you know, it is something that we're seeing in our survey that people definitely use, and some people are deeply affected by it. So we have over 700 responses so far. And by far, the biggest use is recreational bike use. People, I mean, it is kind of a long span for just walking. But, you know, there was one woman who responded who said she used it for wheelchair access. She used that specific spot to exercise with her wheelchair. And she said there really isn't any other spot to do that in the area, because there's not like a long kind of protected space where she can just...
Yeah, separated from traffic.
Right, exactly. So so again, it is really affecting people, the closure. And in terms of how you can take the survey, we have it linked on our Facebook page, but if you want to just... We also have like a little short URL. So the address is shortURL.AT/ZIGD.
Okay. That's a rough one. Yeah, I suggest people go to Project 7B Facebook page and find it there. And it's been out on some other posts around on Facebook as well. You could actually pin that to the top of your page for a while. So people, all you got to do is scroll down a little ways and you'll find several posts you have there to access the survey.
Right.
And the survey, I just took it, it's like 7 questions and only took a few minutes. You know, I'm a recreational user of the Long Bridge. So what is the state likely to do? I mean, this is a really expensive fix that we need.
You know, I don't know what the actual financial details are, because that really hasn't been something that we are privy to. But we are gathering feedback from the community because we want to know what the community actually thinks before we approach officials and say, this is what the community thinks. We want to actually know. So we are going to gather all of the feedback. We're going to close the survey. We had originally said the 7th, but because this is going on air on the 8th, we're going to extend it by a couple more days, and the survey will close at midnight on the 12th. Of July. And after that, there's a meeting on the 15th. ITD is having a meeting in Coeur d'Alene. And I spoke with a woman who said that she's willing to get the officials the results of the survey before the meeting so that they go to the meeting prepared with this information. So on Monday, I will be compiling all the results and sending that to them.
Okay. So if you're listening and you want to get your 2 cents in on this, go to Project 7B Facebook page and scroll right down until you find a link to the survey, and do it within the next couple of days, because you do need to close it. You want to get that information available. It's impacting a lot of people here. It's kind of a quality of life issue for local residents. You know, it's part of the tourism product for people that are in the tourism industry that could make an economic point on that.
Right. I just want to note that Transportation Department did fund another spot bus route.
Yes.
That is running daily from the old Long Bridge Grill site.
That's the south end. Yeah.
Yep. To the parking area for the Long Bridge path on the north end. And I'm someone who commutes by bike. I live in Sagal, and I commute by bike in the summer to come to my work here in town. And so it has impacted me. I don't really want to drive. And then it's especially nice to be able to ride your bike into town, either to run errands. I use it for shopping. Especially when there's an accident on the Long Bridge. So I think that it serves more than just a recreation.
Sure.
Though that's the most, it's obviously the most popular. But yesterday I used the spot bus and it was great.
Yeah.
It was great. It's just that it only runs from 11 to 7 daily.
Daily. There are a couple earlier ones, weekdays, I think.
Yes. However, they didn't necessarily work for me.
Okay. Time-wise. Yeah.
Time-wise. And so, I mean, I think it is, it's, you know, I think more than just an inconvenience, and it's really important. I would like to see ITD personally, you know, extend that that time when they provide that service. But in all fairness, I was the only one on the bus yesterday when I was riding. And there's not a lot of people who are actually using that service. And so it concerns me that they might look at the numbers of the bus riders and say, oh, this isn't really a huge need, and make it a lower priority. So I think this survey is really valuable.
Survey is valuable for that. And folks can see the schedule for Spot Bus. Go to spotbus.org, all in word, spotbus.org. And you can click to a page that shows the schedule, which is 11 to 7 every day of the week, and then runs every 30 minutes. So it's convenient in that way. They do have a couple times earlier than 11. You have to catch them if you were a commuter.
Yeah.
And definitely, you know, use the spot bus.
Yeah.
If you want to get across the bridge with a bike or to take a walk on the other side.
I'm actually kind of hoping that this leads to the spot bus being able to, and I don't know where the funding will come from. It'd be great if ITD did it. Like a route that you went all the way to the station, the gas station and the light in Sagal.
Yeah,
have a stop there and also the Long Bridge thing. And then connect to like where there's another spot bus, you know, route in town. So it'd be a little bit longer, but I think that would be great for
people. This might be a step that goes that direction, actually.
Yeah, potentially.
Because it wouldn't take that much more to drive a few more miles and extend that route as it currently stands. But that funding would need to come from another source, because Spot Bus is funded by the local municipalities using it, you know, Sandpoint, Dover, Kootenai, Ponderay. And Sagal didn't really have a municipality.
And it'd be nice if the county were kicking in, but
yeah.
Another idea, but and this kind of tags into another project that we've been working on with Project 7B, is like a water taxi or a ferry. I mean, we used to have ferries before the Long Bridge. We had ferries, and
that was a long time ago.
Yes. But there's no reason we couldn't have a water taxi. And
I think it was a Ford at Siniaquapine too, so you could wait
across. Well, laugh all you will, but what if something happened to the Long
Bridge
and we just couldn't use the Long Bridge, right?
Yeah, that would be very cool. To, like that marina at the south end, you could jump on a boat there and get to
But we also, City Beach. there are county road ends that are public right-of-ways, and Camp Bay used to be one of those where there was a ferry that used to come there regularly, and people would send their goods to market or mail stuff, or they'd just hop on to go to Sandpoint.
Yeah, that was back in the day, that was a vital transportation route.
But our county gave that road end away.
Yeah, and there's something where we need citizen action right there. I mean,
exactly. But I think it's another reason why we shouldn't be vacating these public rights of way that access the lake.
No question. At this stage of the game, every one of those is really valuable. And once they're gone, they're gone. Okay. That's a little bit of a different topic. I want to, so go to the Long Bridge survey on the website. You can find links to it there. And check out Spot Bus if you're wanting to get across. Go spotbus.org. I wanted to mention there's actually an interactive map and you can see where the bus is at any time on its route. So that's helpful for people to say, oh, looks like they're on the other side. Might be 15 minutes before they get here. Okay. There's something else you guys have going right now. It's a land use toolkit. And this is something you have on your website and you are building it up. But tell us a little bit more about what is the land use toolkit.
Yeah, so the Land Use Toolkit is a set of evergreen tools that people can use to learn more about land use generally and learn how to engage with land use locally and just generally. So it's an ongoing project we are working on. We have put up a glossary on our website already, and it's a pretty long glossary, and it has some local terms as well as kind of general terms. We have a couple of separate articles about things like what is a comprehensive plan, what is a septic system, because people don't necessarily know, and that's fine. I mean, I definitely did not know all of these terms before I started working on this. So, you know, even if you're pretty well versed in land use, I think it can be kind of fun to scroll through and look at the glossary. We have some pages on recommendations for comment letters and giving public testimony and a hearing. And we also have some other things that are in progress.
With the toolkit.
With the toolkit,
yeah,
right.
To build that up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we have a lot of things we want to do with that, like a tutorial, for instance, like on how to research. Like, for instance, if you had something that's proposed, like maybe it's a conditional use permit or it's a, you know, subdivision or a big zone change proposed in your neighborhood and you want to find out more about it, we'd like to do a tutorial that shows how to research that information and where to find this stuff and how to use the public map to get more information, just to empower people so that they know where all that stuff is. But also we have some stuff we need to work on the website so that all these things are kind of easy to find in one place. But a few years ago, we did a tutorial webinar, a Zoom webinar on land use planning that also I think is helpful for people who just want to be better versed in what it is and how it works.
Yeah, that's currently on the homepage.
That's on the homepage.
Yeah, you scroll down a little bit, but it's on the homepage.
But I think that could go.
Yeah,
I mean, we've got some like reorganizing to do just so everything's kind of under one heading.
Right.
But yeah, all that stuff takes time. So this is a work in progress and just so, yeah, hopefully people will just keep checking back in. And every time we add something to it, mm-hmm. it'll be shared on Facebook,
right.
And then we hope to do a workshop later too.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, this is like a grant-based project. So grant-based projects, you know, you kind of have to pace them out. And I just finished, I'm finishing up another grant-based project that we did with Kinnexu Land Trust and the Historical Society that goes back to what we were talking about with Camp Bay. And that is documenting the public access sites on the lake and the river.
Yeah, making an inventory of what we have.
Making an inventory and also creating a map, like a water trail map. And I've been working on the website. I spent a lot of time on the history. There are a ton of research volunteers who with the Historical Society. So I ended up working on that. And I'm really excited for it to be almost done and almost ready to share with everyone.
Yes. I'm going to see it myself.
Yeah.
I was bummed that we lost that access at Camp Bay. Yeah. You can still get there by walking trail.
Yeah, and I actually have not walked it yet, and yeah. I've heard that there's some issues with that, too. Have you walked it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay.
What kind of issues are popping up there?
Well, I don't want to say too much because I haven't actually been down there lately.
Secondhand.
Yeah, it's secondhand information. I actually was thinking about going there tomorrow and checking it out and doing some personal research.
There you go.
But, yeah, one of the reasons they were able to do that was because there were no trespassing signs posted down there for so many years that people just thought it was not a public access.
And it was a very narrow, so like 50 feet wide.
50 feet wide, yeah.
But you could launch a canoe, you could take a swim, yeah.
Yeah, but what I'm hearing is that there's like no parking signs up where you're supposed to be able to park to use the trail and stuff like that.
Right.
So it's right now, this is secondhand and so I'm not sure. But it should be looking welcoming to the public, and I think that's that could be an issue. But one thing I want to point out is the water trail. We are also researching some sites where they appear to be public We believe they are a public, but we're hesitant to put them on that water trail plant map at this point because we have additional research to do because, yeah, it they don't look public to people.
Right.
But they...
Adjacent landowners might not...
So there's still some work to be done there. So, but I mean, we started working on this, that issue after the Camp Bay thing, because we didn't want to lose any more lands that are actually
water access, which is sites. With what, 111 miles of shoreline around the lake. It's surprising how few places there are that you can actually get to it.
Right. Well, and I'm wondering, I don't know if it's on that map. Mm-hmm. Also, I was wondering why the map doesn't extend down the river, but
yeah, there is one. There is, yes, there's, yeah,
or two that they gotta hit with. But there is like state land, state park land that was, it's land that was given by a local family to the State Department of Recreation.
Well, that's right.
And yeah, you know, like off of Eureka Road, I think, or
is it, it's a little bit down lake from Bottle Bay, right?
Yeah. On the North Shore. Mm-hmm. And that has so much potential. And I'm very excited about that. But that's been virtually unknown by most people. And there's no real way to dock there at this point or necessarily use it. But I think the state's very interested in, you know, people's ideas for how to use that.
Yeah. Enhancing our public access. I mean, that's what should be what the Parks and Recreation Department's about. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with two folks from Project 7B, Executive Director Katie Botkin and Founding Board Member Susan Drumheller. We're talking about a variety of things concerning this group. And let's dig in now on just a few of the issues. We don't have a ton of time left, but some of the issues that I see that I don't know hardly anything about, but there is a question on the Edgewater Estates in Priest River. And Katie, so what is that particular one about?
Let me see. Well,
I dragged this off of your Facebook page, basically.
Yeah. So basically we, part of what we do is we research upcoming land use hearings that are going before any board, whether it's like the Board of County Commissioners, the Zoning Board, Planning Board. And we publicize those, especially if they're something that we think the public would be interested in. And this is more of like an educational component that we do. We don't really typically comment and say like you should say this or that. We just put it out there.
Information source.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that one you said was the end. You were asking about
Edgewater Estates and Priest River. I think it's a short plat application.
Oh, the short
it has
plat,
July 20th comment.
Yeah. So the short plat, that's actually an interesting thing. The short plats are administratively approved. So they don't actually have a hearing, but the public can comment on them. So if you're wanting to know more about this, we post all the information on our Facebook and on our Instagram.
And it usually has a link to the planning file, so you can do more digging yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's not all the information that's available to you.
Right, yeah.
So this one is to take a 52, almost 53-acre lot and subdivide it to 10 lots. That would be ranging from 5 acres to 6.2 acres, which... so that's one of these questions where should we take a large piece of property and create a greater density on there?
Well, and just one thing that everybody should be aware of is if something is zoned, say suburban, you are entitled to divide your property to the maximum density allowed under that zoning. But under the subdivision code, you have to make sure that you meet certain standards. So as long as the developer is meeting those standards, it's likely to be approved.
Right.
So just because somebody doesn't like that the subdivision is going in their neighborhood, doesn't mean that there's going to be grounds to stop it.
Right.
There will only be grounds to stop it if for some reason they're not meeting the standards that are required under the subdivision code. And then you have to make that case to them.
Right. And I think that goes back to, you know, the code and have the importance of the code, because if the code is really lax and, you know, you haven't been paying attention to anything that's been written and it's essentially been written by out-of-state developers, then, you know, when it comes time, you're going to realize that I actually have no reason to object to this thing, even though it's...
You might have reason.
Yeah, you might have reason.
But you don't have any grounds to stop it, you know? And, and it's really hard for the officials to say no because the law says...
They're conforming to the zone, so...
But another thing that we found over many years of, you know, being involved in this stuff is... The courts, because there's been many, this would be an interesting thing to research, is how many lawsuits have been filed in this county over land use decisions. And people have filed lawsuits, and often what they find is the courts will defer to the county commissioners or the city council on how they interpret their own code. So while the code you might think is very clear in one direction, if the commissioners interpret it another way, the courts will defer to the way the county commissioners interpret their own code. So a lot of it is political will, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's Edgewater. Let's stay in that part of the county right now, because there are a couple of issues. Yeoman Bluffs subdivision, would be a change from rural to recreation and near Priest Lake. And that's going to be going before the zoning... Is it zoning commission?
Because it's a zoning.
It's a zoning question, not a planning question. But
It might also go before a hearing examiner, which now is, they have a new hearing
examiner. So this is to take a larger parcel and it's proposed to be a 12-unit subdivision near Coulon.
But the zone change is something where, you know, now that it's, what is it, rural residential? What's the current zoning?
The current zoning, let's see, it's probably rural residential or something like that. It's zoned recreation currently.
It is zoned recreation.
It is zoned recreation.
Oh, okay.
So it's just, the request is for a subdivision.
Oh, okay. So it's already zoned recreation. Yeah, they have to meet the design standards.
Okay. And then there is a question about land use designations for shoreline parcels around Priest Lake. And that, I think, plays into the comp plan. Is that right?
That is exactly. That, yeah. Yes, that is the comp plan issue. And that is where there are, if you look at the current comp plan land use designations, there's areas all around the lake where there are these recreational densities, which are really small lots, right? And they are in an area that's designated for, say, rural residential or even agriculture forestry, which have, you know, 5 or 10 or 20 acre minimums, right? But these are like quarter acre or less lots, but they've been in existence for years, so they're grandfathered in. And so, you know, the folks who live around Priest Lake now and, you know, the very vocal majority, I would say, have said, please don't change that. Because if you do, inevitably, you're going to lump in more property than is already highly densely developed and create, you know, even more development in this area. And the sewer districts up there, some of them are pretty much maxed out. And I think that's one concern with Yeoman Bluffs.
Right.
That the sewer district is basically like, we can't handle what we already have.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so of all our big lakes, Priest Lake has the most pristine.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So it's really important to try to protect that. And they've already like approved that development down in the Coulon wetlands, which filters pollutants that go into Priest Lake. And once you start developing wetlands, then you lose that filtering mechanism.
Right.
People really treat wetlands like they're just swamps, but they're very important in the whole ecosystem to keeping, you know, basically protecting our groundwater and our surface water. So, yeah.
Let's switch to a little different part of the county. So there is also a request for a zone change from rural 5 to recreation on a little bit more than 9 acres off of Cedar Lane near East Hope. And the project is called Stone Hedge. Mm-hmm. That would require a zone change.
Yeah, right. That's a pretty big density change.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when you go into the file, there's a link to the file on both on the Facebook and, well, it's not, you have to copy and paste on mm-hmm. Instagram. But sometimes it's interesting to go in and look at what is around there, because people often make the argument that, you know, if my neighbor is this particular zoning, then I should be able to have that particular zoning. If it's, you know, everything around a rural area is rural, then most likely one would hope that it would not actually get changed. And what we've seen...
That is one of the policies in the comp plan that has been approved for the new comp plan, is that the Planning Commission reflected the desire to try to have some, you know, to prevent spot zoning. It would be a spot zone if you approved like a high density area in the midst of a low density land use designation.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, it does raise a question about private property rights. So I have this property, why can't I do what I want with it?
Well, but the thing is, you're only entitled to develop to the density that something is zoned to. So if it's zoned rural residential right now, that you're entitled to split it into 5s. But
yeah, a developer comes along and buys a larger parcel, and then they go for a zone change. Well, that kind of subverts the idea, the private property rights argument, I think.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah, and that's often what we've seen. I've seen a lot of kind of bad faith arguments from developers, like, you know, we should be allowed to do whatever we want. And that completely ignores the rights of the neighbors to have a peaceful neighborhood. And, you know, often people come into a specific area thinking like, oh, you know, this is zoned for 10 acres. This is zoned for 5 acres. And they're not looking to be next to a high density development.
Mm-hmm. That's part of the reason they made their purchase decision.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's why the comp plan is important, because it kind of outlines the intent for the larger area.
One more question, because we're going to run out of time. So has Project 7B been involved with development Trestle Creek?
Only insofar as making sure we try to keep people updated on what's going on and how to be involved. But we haven't taken a position as an organization, and we try not to take positions on individual developments as much as possible. We try to keep our advocacy more on the policy level.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to do surveys, you know, get the, and we've done, you know, professional style type listening sessions and surveys to get a sense of what people really want. And we also pay attention to the comments people are making. And so I think we have a pretty good idea of what the general sense is about the direction.
Right. But we have shared over the years, I mean, this is an ongoing project. We've certainly shared and publicized a lot about that development.
Yeah. I mean, these high interest projects, we really try to highlight a lot on our page and share as much information as we can so people are informed.
Well, we've really only scratched the surface here,
right.
But we are about out of time.
Talk about Schweitzer.
What's going on at Schweitzer?
They're trying to expand more high density up there as part of the comp plan process.
No. Okay. Is that an applied court?
Well, they did apply a couple years ago, and then they withdrew their application when they got a lot of pushback because it was right before they were going to start working on the map. But they've been advocating for their increased density through the comp plan process as well.
Okay. Well, that one's out there too. So Again, people can check out project7b.org. That's your website, as well as on Facebook. You're at Bonner County Project 7B. And you are a largely volunteer organization, but I presume that it's helpful if people donate some money. For you do have expenses.
We do. We pay our executive director. She is not,
it's not just a
volunteer. So yes, that is important. And if people donate, that gives us some discretionary funds and allows us to jump onto projects or dig more deeply into issues that we wouldn't otherwise be able to do because, you know, the grant funds are pretty restricted on how we can spend those.
Yeah, typically the grants that we get are for specific projects like the water trail project or the toolkit project.
Yeah. But the administrative stuff, as with most grants, they want you to take care of that.
And all this Facebook, it takes a lot of time for Katie to do, you know, to research what's coming up and to post that stuff on social media.
Oh, sure. So if you go to project7b.org and you get on the menu, you'll see there's a donate to P7B link there. So you can support the organization that way. I want to say thank you, Katie Botkin, Executive Director of Project 7B, and Susan Drumheller, Founding Board Member. Any last words you want to throw out there?
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And let's all work together to keep this place a great place to live. I mean, that's one thing that, that I think we all have in common is this love of this place.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.